Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast, where we want to talk about anything and everything gardening. I'm Victoria Shepherd and I'm your host. This week, I'm excited to sit down with Diane Noland, a longtime friend of WILL and former host of the Mid-American Gardener television show. Diane appeared on the very first show with Jack Kelly. And when she retired in August 2017, she'd been with the show for over 25 years. Diane has been a University of Illinois horticultural instructor for many years. She received numerous national and international awards and was entered into the Illinois State Florists Association Hall of Fame in 2015. Thank you for joining me, Diane.
So glad to be here, Victoria.
This is so exciting. I'm really excited about being a part of this project, especially since I'm an inexperienced gardener, and I can't wait to learn from experts like you. So we've got lots of things to cover today. Let's get started.
Great.
Where did your love of gardening stem from? Was there a defining aha moment that you can share with us?
I have one that's for flowers, and I have one that's for vegetables. So okay. I'm going to tell them both. When I was five, I was in Sunday school with Mrs. Parrish and Mrs. McQueen, and it was in April, in springtime, and we went for a walk to Mrs. McQueen's garden, 2x2, five-year-olds, 2x2. And she opened up the gate, and we went into her backyard, and there were flowers everywhere. And I remember very distinctly this yellow one. I tell my classes how it was backlit with sunlight, and I walk towards it, and I say that soft music cues up. That may or may not be true. But anyway, I was so excited. It was the first time I'd ever seen a daffodil, and I remember that view, that vision from when I was five. And I have loved and researched daffodils since then and have thousands in my garden. So that was my flower inaugural moment.
Uh-huh.
The one with vegetables was with my grandpa Charlie. And he would plant his vegetable garden. And because I had younger legs, I was probably 8 to 10, I would be the one that he would cut the potato. And then I would plant the potato and put my foot in the row and then plant the other potato on the end of my foot. And I would walk in the row and plant so it had a foot, my foot spacing. And I've never forgotten that. And I plant my potatoes a little differently than that, but, you know, a little more mulch and et cetera. But I learned to vegetable garden with my grandpa Charlie, and I've loved that ever since.
Now, and how what size feet did you have when you were that age?
I think he planted them a little close because I was I had a little. So actually, I didn't put them right at the edge. So I think it ended up being a foot apart. My feet were not that big when I was 8 or 10. But anyway, so he was trying for a foot apart. So it
you got some
it
uniformity, right?
It was.
Okay. Well, that is a good way to start the show.
Okay.
And our first question comes from Jan Curry. Would you like to read it?
Okay. Jan writes, I have a vegetable garden in the backyard, and the last few years my root crops are not doing well. I use a garden fertilizer in the spring prior to planting, and the radishes and onions grow great tops but poor fruits. My research tells me more sun and less nitrogen. I can't control the more sun, but can control the nitrogen levels. What and where can I get something to neutralize high nitrogen levels? It does not get as much sun as it really should, but am limited to what I can do. My tomatoes do okay, but I have grown better in other gardens with more sun. Should I try to put in some compost of some kind? Well, Jan is exactly right. She has too much nitrogen when she starts out. And in general, if you let fall and winter, spring and snow, that helps to, not exactly leach, but it does help to leach out some of the higher nitrogen. And so she's probably okay for this year. I use very little fertilizer, and anything that is a root crop, you don't want to fertilize. Nitrogen helps the leaves. And you don't want to help the leaves. You want it to help the roots. So I use compost. Or sometimes I've used a vegetable fertilizer that is maybe like a 4-3-3 or a 4-3-4. It's almost nothing. Or I use nothing at all for radishes.
So is that the nitrogen is causing her to have great tops?
Great tops.
Uh-huh.
But it's not helping the roots. And so she really, I would say this year, used no fertilizer at all. And if if she wants to, she can use well-aged, I think well-aged mulch. I wouldn't even go compost. She's got too much nitrogen anyway. So when I plant my onions, I do them in a wide row, and I space them 4 to 6 inches apart, depending on how big I want them to be. And I just do a little side dressing of a little bit of a 4-3-4, something, or compost, and it's on the side. It's not right at the level. And then I mulch them eventually, so they get good moisture. They're not stressed for moisture, and very little nitrogen.
So go light for on the nitrogen.
Light on the nitrogen if you want root crops.
Perfect. And then I think you have a question from Gary Winter from Altamont. What does he say?
Okay. For the past few years, I've been trying to grow zucchini, etc., organically with not much success. Any ideas as to what I should try? Gary, you are not alone. A lot of times you start out great. These zucchinis, cucumbers, those kinds of things will look great. The vines get really nice. And then right when they look the best, they just wilt and die. And so there's a couple of things that attacks them. And I'm going to start first with the squash vine borer, and that will get into zucchinis, probably pumpkins too, not so much cucumbers, but zucchinis get them, and they just wilt. I mean, the plant's looking great, and then it's gone. And so what happens is this squash vine borer is a moth earlier in the season, and it's a little coppery color moth. It's really hard to get those. But what you should be doing every week, if not more, looking on the leaves, usually underside, for these little reddish eggs. And when you see those, you handpick them, you brush them off, and you do whatever you have to do to get them out of the garden, you know, get rid of them, take them out of the garden, and keep looking for those eggs, because those will then end up being that squash vine borer. The other thing you can do, and I've had a lot of trouble with zucchini, either you have too much or then they die. And so I have one that I use that is self-pollinating, and I use a floating row cover, which is a really light woven fabric. Water and light get through it, but not moths, not the moth of the squash vine borer. And so it will pollinate underneath this floating row cover. You can water it through there. And then when you're sick of having like a garage full of zucchini and you don't need that many, then you can always take off the floating row cover. But it has worked very well. And I usually grow one zucchini plant for my family. And when I grow too many, then I start leaving them in bags on the doors of my colleagues at work and anyone else who will take them. So floating row cover, you can just make it heaped up over it, or you can do a PVC pipe or something. But I usually just put it, you know, secure it on all sides and have enough that the plant will grow up and expand it.
And you said you usually have one plant.
I just have one.
How many does that produce?
If you get good moisture and you don't have the squash vine borer, you can literally get dozens. I mean, they're indeterminate. They keep going. It really goes well. And I have trouble with a cucumber beetle on cucumbers. And it's a longer little flying thing, and you can't do anything about getting this. So I do try either succession planting of cucumber, where if one dies, you have different stages of cucumber, or floating row cover on cucumber. And I tend to grow two of those. I grow a lemon type and then a fresh and or pickled longer green type. So I don't grow very many because when you're successful, you're very successful.
Now, our next question, Cheryl Robinson wrote to us via Facebook. Perhaps you can answer her question.
Okay. She writes, when is the best time to trim mature holly berry bushes? I have one male and three female, which is excellent, by the way. The male is what pollinates the three female, which you get the red berries in the winter.
So the male one, no berries.
No berries, but you need that because they are male and female plants. So she did great having one male and three females. So 2 years ago, they suffered during the winter and just last spring produced berries again. You will have that happen sometimes when you have big drops in temperature or if you get... We had a very, very wet, that one winter that was extremely wet and big drops in temperature. Sometimes they'll suffer, but normally holly berries that are zoned for zone 5 in our area will do great. And so they should produce every year if it's not a problem. So she says they're starting to produce again. Now, probably I'm going to give her two answers. If you want berries with the little holly berry leaf and some berries, I actually trimmed my mature holly berries in December because I used them in centerpieces and designs for Christmas. And so it was actually a warm time, too. So I did prune them when it was warm, but I probably would have pruned them if it was cold just because I wanted the berries. So you can prune them in winter for decorative purposes. Mm-hmm. But normally you wait until spring, about the same time I do, about the same time as I prune roses, which is after frost. And so after frost, the danger of frost is past, and when I get to it, those could be two different things. But April or May, then you trim it to shape. And I wouldn't go big on this because you want them to produce berries again. But, you know, if there's a couple branches sticking off here, I would prune back to shape it. Don't make it a ball. Make it a natural-looking shrub. And so prune a little bit. They say never to go more than a third. I would not go even close to that. I would just start to prune back a little bit every year until you get it the size you want. But even better, prune it for decorative use, and then you may not have to prune it in the spring. But I did get one that got carried away, and I pruned it back a third and let it come back.
Okay.
So it looks great.
And so the rule is no more than a third of the overall plant size.
Yes, and that's pretty drastic when you think about it. So you can prune less than that. And you can prune one side if it's growing away or into the house or the mm-hmm. gutters, you know, if you need to prune one side. But normally you prune it in just a nice, general, natural way. Don't shape it like a ball or a Christmas tree. We call them meatballs, ice cream cones. Don't do that. Holly berries look really nice, natural, with a little give and take of the outline. But okay. Generally oval or roundish, but not strict oval or round.
Great. Don't go oval or round. So since we're talking about the winter and plants getting through the winter, Ruthie Helm emailed us, and she was asking about tulips and daffodils. So could we answer that next?
Okay. She writes, we are wondering if, one, we can put tulips and daffodils in a few outside pots. And then number two, could we keep them on our deck all winter long in a plastic pot so it wouldn't crack from a freeze and thaw? And number three, would the pots enable them enough surrounding soil to keep the pots themselves, to keep the bulbs themselves from freezing and rotting? Okay, so number one, she put tulips and daffodils in a few outside pots. Normally, when you do that, you tend to not leave the pots outside unprotected, you know, just on the deck. A lot of times when you put them in, you want to either put them in a double pot, a bigger pot where you've got mulch or soil or some kind of something in between, or a huge pot so you have the ability for the soil to freeze and thaw without hurting the bulb. You don't want the bulb to freeze exactly. You want it to have some protection.
So you're saying that you would put some kind of insulation in the large pot and then you put a smaller pot inside.
Yes.
So you've got, what would you use for the insulation?
The insulation could be moss, it could be soil, it could be mulch. But in general, I know a lot of people who, if they pot up tulips and daffodils, they just make a hole and drop it right down into the soil in the garden. You know, you can make a hole and put them down and then you have the entire mass of the soil at your house to insulate. Now, it's a little more work,
but you're just digging a hole.
You're
right?
Just digging a hole and you're putting that pot down in. So it will keep the pot from cracking and it won't let the bulbs freeze quite so severely. And so I would say a small pot is not enough soil to keep, you know, the pot, either one, from cracking or from the bulbs from doing well. And so a lot of times people who put a few daffodils and tulips in pots and dig them like that actually lift them early, and that's called forcing, where you bring it inside say, in February, and let it develop one or two pots at a time inside.
And then move them outside when the weather warms up.
And then, you enjoy them in the house, or you can just lift them and put them on your deck for a few weeks when they're in flower. Now, can I go beyond her question?
Sure.
So let's say that she's brought some inside and she's enjoyed them, or she's had them on her porch or deck and enjoyed them. What you do after is very important, because these plants are perennials. Daffodils and tulips are perennials. Daffodils more so. Tulips aren't as long-lasting. But anyway, so you keep watering them until the leaves become lighter green and then yellow. Mm-hmm. And that's called letting the foliage ripen. And so you want to let it ripen. And Victoria, it's ugly. You know, so if she's got it in a pot, that's great. She can move it back behind something, move it, you know, where it's still sunny, but out by the garage or by a fence. But you want to let the foliage ripen. You also want to remove any seed heads to keep them from going to seed. Mm-hmm. So you deadhead the leftover seed heads and you let the foliage ripen. And at that point, when they have ripened and the plant looks horrible, you can then plant those outside. Or you can store them to plant them in fall, but you can plant them outside. I do a couple every spring like that. I buy them and enjoy them, mm-hmm. you know, from a garden center or wherever I find them. And so I let them ripen and then, you know, cut the foliage back. It's ripened. And then I will plant them in my garden, because that's when I know where I need more daffodils. That's where I know, oh, I need some pink tulips over here.
So don't get rid of them after they have ended the season.
If you let them go and you never water them and they turn brown, then you've probably killed them. But if you water them until they ripen or yellow, they're perfectly fine.
And then you stop watering them.
Then you stop watering them, and then you plant them outside. And normally tulips are planted, and daffodils that are big, 6 inches deep by 6-inch spacing. And just tuck them in and around perennials you already have that are coming up in your garden. And it is the best way to get a little pop of color, maybe 4 or 5 bulbs from a pot, or 10 or 12 if you've got 2 pots. Just pop in a little bit, and at the time, which would be probably June, late May, early June.
Interesting. Now, I have one more question for you before you go.
Okay.
If you were a vegetable, what would you be and why?
Just one?
Yes.
Well, oh, I know that everyone's going to pick this, but it probably would have to be tomato, because people are so happy, red, so tasty. But if I could be one that people don't expect me to be, I would be a kohlrabi, because kohlrabi is an unexpected, you never know what you're going to get. It has leaves on the outside, a root that's above ground, you know, a swollen one that should be in the soil, and it has an interesting taste to it. So if I do what it's expected, it'd be a tomato, because nothing tastes better. But the unexpected vegetable would be kohlrabi. And it is
Bit of a rebel.
Yes, undergrown and very nice. We eat it fresh and we stir fry it. You can roast it, but we eat it fresh the most.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming in and doing this inaugural podcast with us. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Victoria. This has been fun.
And many thanks to you, listeners, for joining us for the very first episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Braltz. Find us on the web at midamericangardener.org, where you can stream us as many times as you like. This and future episodes will also be available on iTunes. Subscribe and rate with abandon. And if you have any gardening questions for future inclusion on either the TV show or the podcast, email us at yourgarden@gmail.com or message us via Facebook. Simply search for Mid-American Gardener. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another gardening whiz. Until then, happy gardening.